And you're going.
All right. I feel very official with this recording in my hand. Hi, my name is Sarah. I'm a food addict.
Hi, Sarah.
Thank you all for being here. I believe in being prepared and having notes. I have lots of notes. I've also prayed. I know that God will take, hopefully, I'm trusting that God will take my words and turn them into something that hopefully is helpful. I'm going to ask my husband to start the pictures. If you would, just one word about the pictures. There's a lot, and you don't have to by any means look through all these pictures, but I didn't want to separate the one. My mom did that for our wedding, and there's a lot. I didn't want to take them out and then some thin, so I just flip through whatever you feel like. And the top ones are the after. Okay, what I've learned in listening to, listening to other people in OA, at phone meetings and other speakers, is a really good thing to do is to say what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. So I'm going to tell you what it was like, and spend a few minutes on that. Well, growing up, and I went back to childhood, you know, a lot of us have food issues that happened in childhood. I think I do. A brief overview is I grew up in what I consider a really great home in terms of my family of origin, I think that's what we call it. Two loving parents and one brother and two sisters. Lydia was born when I was in fourth grade, so she, for a while there was two girls and then there were three. And we got along well. We lived in the Midwest, in the United States, and good schools. I was never abused. I'm thankful to God. Visits with family. We're a musical family, and we used to sing. My maiden name is Quam. You'll probably see it. The Quam family singers on our vacations. We'd go to churches. That would be our vacation. We'd drive, and we'd sing. So, and I won't apologize for what I'm going to say because that's what I say, but not by any means saying that this is what you have to do or preaching. But my higher power is Jesus. I'm a Christian. And I'm very much in what the Bible says and that my higher power is Jesus. And that goes back to my upbringing. I really made my faith my own. When I was my senior of high school, we moved. And I was able to, you know, not because of what my parents said or my dad's a pastor. He's semi-retired. But because of my own faith in Jesus. But that tells to my home life growing up, I knew about God's love and had a good upbringing. We weren't perfect. I think maybe one thing we did is we had all of our social activities were around church. It's like we didn't get to know a lot of people outside of church. I think we should have done that. So that was one thing. My mom, and she's open about this, is a recovering compulsive overeater. And when she would be binging, us kids would enjoy it. We didn't know what it meant, especially when you're, but we would get, you know, ice cream or, you know, and we're like, oh, cool, mom got us treats, you know. So there was some, and I think maybe the way I looked at food was probably a little bit skewed, but I don't by any means blame my mom. But that dynamic was there. And I think that probably influenced, but it's all been my choice. I just remember one dinner, one of her talents does not really lie in cooking dinner for guests. That she's a teacher, she's a musician, she's good with special needs kids. She's got an amazing number of great qualities. But she was really nervous. Somebody from church was coming over, and she made like four or five side dishes and the main course, and there was food all over. And I was like, Mom, what's going on? That's one thing I remember. Food was different in our family sometimes. It was just different. And that was just one meal. We would have long days at church, and I remember eating on Sunday nights. We'd get out a lot of food, but it wasn't anything awful. I didn't steal or sneak food, but I always had good portions. I have a picture of me, I don't have it, but fourth grade, I was like all legs, you know, and little girls are growing up and their kind of bodies are morphing. And I was pretty thin, and I think that was probably fourth grade. But I got called the Goodyear blimp at school. Kids are mean. And I was not that, I was heavy, but I was not, you know, I didn't think so anyway. They also called me AT&T because I talked so much, so that's which is kind of funny. I'll skip junior high and high school. My senior year of high school, And that was hard, but it wasn't as hard as you would think it was. If I had, it was kind of good for me, I think, in a sense. And my parents knew that I could do that and I would be okay. Otherwise, they wouldn't have made the choice to move then. But one thing I remember growing up just about food is that there was never any portion control. The food was on the table and you just took as much as you wanted, you know. And if I was hungry after school, and it's not like I would come. I don't remember coming home and binging. I think the first time I probably ever really binged was, like, college. But there was never any kind of limit. Like, oh, maybe we should just have one dish, you know. It was just always just, you know. Then I went to college in Chicago at a Bible college, and I studied music and Bible. And there's a picture of Dean and I. We met at college, but we didn't get married till like 10 or 12 years later. And it's kind of a fun picture of us in the practice rooms. So we both studied music, so yay for my husband. Okay. I want to go in. I got to go to Summers. Between Summers and Chicago, I went home to Minnesota and lived with my family for the summer. And I worked at Pizza Hut, and I did a lot of waitressing. And there were some really dark times on those summers because the summer I worked at Pizza Hut, I think was the summer my dad had some people in his church that were really mean to him and were really horrible. And it was a really hard time for my dad job-wise and his just a real trial. And we were all kind of down. And I think, if I remember right, that was the summer I would work at Pizza Hut from like 3 to 11. And then I would order pizza, but from another pizza place. And they had a thing, this is just the cunning, baffling, and powerful disease and an unmanageability. They had a thing on the pizza box that came from the computer at the pizza place that said, knock on the door, don't ring the bell. Because I didn't want them to wake up my family, even though they knew. And I'd eat an entire medium pizza, watch TV, whatever, go to sleep, and then get up at like noon or 1 the next day, take a shower, you know. And I just remember that summer. I don't think I did it every night, but the other thing is I was a waitress, and I, again, for some reason worked 3 to 11, or that was my shift. Not always. But I remember I had my tips, and I would go to the store after work. You know, you'd be up and hungry. And I remember just going, I'm going to buy anything and everything I want, and I'm going to eat it. I just had this, that's just what I did. And I went home, and I ate alone, the patterns, eating alone, eating late at night, eating in isolation. Okay, so let's go back to college now. And this has to bring in, I have bipolar disorder, and I have obsessive compulsive disorder, and I'm on meds. And I think the way that my disease, my mental illness goes into this is when I was depressed, I would eat, and that would make me more depressed, and then I would eat more, and that fed. When I'm depressed, I sleep a lot. Praise be unto God for sure that I never started drinking, because it could have gotten horrible. In fact, I was always, this is what was funny, I would say, well, you know, I'm already addicted to sugar, and I would kind of joke, right, I already have one addictive substance in my life. And I was very careful. I'd be like, I'm going to have one drink. And my first drink was with my mom on my 21st birthday, you know. It was, and I just was very careful. And that's just a tribute to God's grace in my life, because as we all know, the alcohol could have been. And when a person is bipolar, a lot of times a person with bipolar will self-medicate with alcohol. I self-medicate with food. Used to, not anymore. So anyway, this was probably a manic depressive episode when I was in Korea with my corral from my college. We went on like a 3-week tour. I'm staying in Korea, and then they were going to Hawaii. And I had had just a thing went through, and I had been on some medication because I had to come home from Florida. I won't spend a lot of time on it, but I didn't get enough sleep, and I got too much sun, and they thought I was hallucinating, and I just really needed to rest, and I hadn't slept well, like, for a long time. And so I missed part of the tour, and they put me on this antidepressant, a real old-school one, and because my mind would race at night because I have mania, and I couldn't get to sleep. And so then they increased the dose, and I'd seen the doctor like twice. It was ridiculous. And then I started hallucinating in Korea, and I couldn't function. I was crying, and so I had to come home. I missed Hawaii, and it was really hard. So then I had one more semester at college because I flunked a couple classes. I had changed degrees from the 5 to the 4 year. this shows how unmanageable my life was, because we say life is unmanageable in food, but my whole life. I had flunked one or two, I think it was two classes. Oh, horrible. So I was a good student. And one was from being late. It was Dr. Mayer, bless his heart. I just need to get rid of my resentment towards him. But I would be like 1 minute late at 8 a.m. and he'd be like, and I'd be like, oh. And I flunked because that was part of his attendance. His grading policy was your attendance. So I had to take that. So this was an extra semester at Moody. My thin pictures at Moody, I'm in a purple dress for senior banquet. That was probably 93. But then my last semester at Moody, I wasn't in choir, and it was very awkward with all those friends from choir, because not everybody understood what had happened. And you can't be in choir for one semester. And I was a senior, and I was finishing, and most of the people I knew had grad, you know, it was just sort of awkward. So what I ended up doing was sleeping and eating. I'd go to class. I had a single room, which was nice as a senior, you know, but then that left a lot of isolation. So I go to class, I go back to my room and sleep, and then I sleep through dinner a lot, and then I go down to the convenience store and get huge, does anybody mind if I mention food? I don't want to mention this. Okay. Huge thing of nachos and cheese, and just a huge pan of nachos with cheese, and bake them in the oven. We had a kitchen, and there was one TV in the dorm, in the lounge, and then I go, and I had pints of ice cream, and I just watch TV, and so I just barely studied. I mean, my other times at Medium, I was in the practice room for an hour before my recital. I mean, I was activities and choir, but this semester was just horrible. And I remember eating three and four candy bars at a time from the vending machine. So that was pretty bad. Okay. And I'd watch TV too late, even though the rules said you could only watch till 11. I'd be, you know. So I did not have regard for the, you know, the rules. And I worked, and then sometimes I think, if I remember right, I would eat dinner in the dining hall and then later go to the convenience store. I worked at the front desk. I had worked off campus, which it was just kind of, mom thought it was stressing me out. She says, can't you get a job on campus? I never had to work a lot, fortunately, because there was some money for us for school, but for my grandpa. But so my last semester I worked in the dorm at the front desk, which was, you know, and answer the door and answer the phone and everything. But the only hours I could get by the time I applied late were like the weekend hours. So my Friday and Saturday nights and Sunday afternoons I was at that desk. Well, I never had any like time with my friends, you know, or like to relax on the weekends. So I think, and I would sleep and get up and skip church and go work. And anyway, all right, so there's kind of some gaps in town. Oh, okay. 2003, I'll go back. In 2000... I graduated from Moody Bible Institute, and then I moved back with my parents. I worked in a grocery store. It was very depressing. So I didn't know what I wanted to do, and I'd had that horrible semester. Well, then I started being more obedient to God, and I got to work at a resort where I was a waitress, and then we sang Hootenannies. And it was like, I was totally overqualified. Well, I want to brag, but they saw my senior recital tape, and they were like, oh, yeah, you can come, because you had to try out or whatever, and they wanted you to not sing. Well, I mean, it was just total. We'd come in from the beach and practice. I mean, it was fine, but it wasn't anything real professional. But we sang, and it was fun. And I got a contact and I was really heavy, a contact with somebody who came as a guest resort, and I got a tryout for an opera company in Minneapolis, and I made it into the chorus. And that was like a dream come true, because that's what I had wanted to do, was to perform. So I moved to Minneapolis as a nanny. This is too much detail. I got to hurry. As a nanny, as a live-in nanny, and sang in this opera company, and got paid like $200 to be in the chorus. I think somebody figured out that it was like enough money for gas. Because none of us made our, you know, everybody had another job, and pretty much, except for maybe the stars. And yeah, the star had a job too. She did like vision commercials, you know, to pay the bills, and then so it was very. But I was being paid to sing, and it was a dream come true. It was fun, and it was, yeah. And so then I'm living in the city. Eventually, then nanny lasted 9 months. It was a really tough gig, but it was fun. And then I went to, and I lived on my own. I had my own apartment. I mean, I was totally on my own. I had my apartment. I had my job. Got a really good secretary job. I was singing in operas and musicals, and it was great. And then I got sick. I got manic, and nobody knew. I'd had a couple other small manic episodes, but nobody knew what they were. And so in 2000, I had two manic episodes, and I ended up moving back with my parents, and I was in the hospital for like a week or two. So, of course, then that's, I mean, you know, you're on your own, and then this happens. So that was really hard. God totally recovered me. I've been on medication for 10 years. I haven't had a manic episode in 10 years. Thank God. And I lived with my parents. I went back to school and got another degree. I worked as a DJ at a part-time announcer DJ at a Christian radio station. This is another story. I'd get off late at night because I do my voice tracking, and then I'd stop at the convenience store and just buy whatever. Or Taco John's is open late, or Taco Bell. I mean, it's like they feed into the people with food addiction. They're like, we're open until 2, you can get shot. It's like, oh, let's go to, you know. But that, I won't comment on our culture. That's not my job. And then I was student teaching, and sometimes I would wake up late, and I'd be late. So, lateness. I conquered that in Phoenix. Praise God, because I always had trouble with being late. All right, so now then, I don't want to gloss over it, but then I moved out to Phoenix, and I got my degree in music teaching. And then I moved out to Phoenix in 2003 and started teaching in the inner city school, K-8 music in the inner city school, loved it. Semester later, ran into Dean, totally from God, from Moody Bible Institute, that we'd never dated, we were just practice room buddies. In fact, can I tell him about
No.
Oh, okay. He came to my senior recital, but anyway. It's nothing bad. Sorry. I'm sorry, honey. Forgive me. I owe you an amends. So then I went out to Phoenix and taught. Well, a semester later, I saw Dean. Hadn't seen him in, what, 10, 12 years, at a music conference and for teachers, a workshop thing. And we started hanging out. We became friends. We started dating. I loved him. I almost chased him away. I was so in love with him. And then a year and a half later, we got married. It was a great, we'll tell you someday when we have more time, like the whole story was great. And we got married in Arizona. We don't have very many pictures of our wedding. They're all on computer disk, but there's one there. And Dean loves me no matter what size I am. And he always supported me. And he always, I mean, I know he loved me no matter what because I was like 250 pounds when we got married. I mean, and that's one thing that I love so much about him is that his love for me doesn't depend on what I look like. And just as a postscript, I think he does like now my new size. He appreciates it. He likes the way I look. You know what I mean? He appreciates the beauty. And he likes getting, he said he likes to get his little arms around me. He likes it so. And I asked him if I could say that, and he said I could. Okay. Okay, the low point. Everybody has a low point. And then I got to get to the recovery because I'm spending too much time on the bad stuff. December of 2006, I remember very distinctly, we got pie for Thanksgiving at Fry's grocery store by our apartment. And I just got obsessive on this pie. And I would go and buy an entire apple pie, and over the course of, I don't know, 2 or 3 days, I'd eat the whole thing. I ate a lot in the car on my own. I ate in secret. This semester, Dean was teaching guitar lessons, so I would maybe see him as he was leaving, because he would teach in the, you know, afternoon hours after school at the kid's house, and I would come home from teaching, and I might see him and say hi quick, or I might not see him, because the time wouldn't work, so I would eat, watch TV, and sleep, and I would go to the grocery store and buy food, like I wouldn't tell him where I was going, and I'd, you know, go and buy binge food, and then I'd hide it in the cupboard or by the laundry room. And he always knew. I mean, it's hard to hide somebody from your husband or wife. I mean, he knew afterwards. But I thought I was being all sneaky. And I'd eat like 3 candy bars. I had a break. We taught reading in the morning, and then we had a break. And I would eat 2 candy bars just to make it to teach for 2 or 3 hours, and then I'd have lunch. It was just awful. But the pie, okay, this was probably the lowest, and this is embarrassing, but I had gotten pie and another thing, maybe one other thing, at the grocery store. I was in the car eating, and I felt such regret, and I felt so bad that I wrapped it all up in the plastic bags pretty good, and I threw it in the trash. We had this, like, park area kind of place in our apartment. The next morning, I was so wanting the food again, I went, and I got it out of the trash, and I ate it. And it was covered, and it was on the top. But who cares? I ate out of the garbage. It's insane. It's just, that's how cunning, baffling, and powerful, and that's how unmanageable my life was. I was a mess, and I was depressed. It was just horrible. That was the low. Well, God heard my cry for mercy. I mean, I was so, and I was undergoing probably a lot of clinical depression. But it was also environmental. When you sit and eat junk food and fall asleep, you're going to get depressed. Because that was what I'd do. I'd eat, sleep, feel bad, and get up the next morning and feel worse. So what happened was I got to my absolute worst, and that would have been December 2006. I mean, I had been heavy in, I mean, probably the worst. And Dean got me a membership to Curves, which when you think, oh, wow, that's heavy. Okay. Thank you. Somehow that might seem like a not a great gift to give your wife a membership to a gym, but it was done in love. It was something I needed, and it was taken very well, and I took it, and I appreciated it, and I went. And they weighed me. I never forget the first day of the gym. I was 282.5, probably at my highest, although I may have been higher when I lived in Minneapolis by myself when I was eating. I had on baggy sweats, PJ pants, and I think I had a PJ shirt. It was fine. It wasn't like I was in my PJs, but it was one of those. And a big baggy, and they were too big, and I had trouble getting on and off some of the machines. If you know Curves, it's a circuit, and you jog or in place or do cardio, and then you go on a machine and you do resistance. Literally, two of the machines, I had trouble getting on and off. And here I am, you know, and they measure you, and oh. Well, I lost 11 pounds the first month. Then I went to OA. I got to back up. I was like, I got to do OA. And my introduction to OA was my mom. And I've seen a lot of recovery in her life. And I'd gone to meetings with her, maybe three meetings or, you know, a handful. And I was never able, you know, I was always like, hi, I'm Sarah, and I'm visiting with my mom. And I never had gotten to the point where I could say I'm a food addict or impulsive overeater. But I knew about OA. And I looked it up online in Arizona, found a meeting on Sunday at 3 o'clock. Audrey, she wouldn't mind if I gave you her name. She's in Arizona. Audrey was like the contact person. You know, I have some contact, and they tell you how to get to the meeting, tell you what time, and welcome you. I still talk to her probably twice a week or more, OA outreach call. She's been in program for like 30 years. And she was so sweet. I got a sponsor. I started weighing and measuring. And I lost and I was exercising. And I lost 11 pounds the first month. I probably had, 30 days of abstinence. And then Valentine's Day, 2007, they had a potluck teacher thing at school, and I just lost it. And I remember my music room was in the gymnasium, and they had all the food set out, and I ate, and I was like, chocolate, you know. And then I'd be in my room, and then I'd be like, oh, I want some more. So I went, going back in more with, like when other people were there when no one could see me, and I had more because I didn't want more people to see. I'm very much a secret eater. And I'm going to say one more bad or horrible, and then I'm going to go to the recovery. But this disease is progressive. It took me a while to get my abstinence, like my abstinence where I feel it's steady. I mean, it's always daily reprieve based upon my fit spiritual condition. So it's never going to be a guarantee. But I had some binges where I would go to Village Inn and I would buy two pieces of pie and I would get two forks to go. It would be to go. And so it would make it look like, you know, it was for two people. And then I'd eat them. And then one time this is progressive disease, compulsive overeating. I thought, you know what? I'm going to buy a whole pie. And I was like, can I? But it'd be cheaper because two people, you know. I think I actually thought that, which is insane. And so I bought a whole pie, but I had them put one piece in a box. And then I ate that. And I ended up eating three pieces, and I think there's four. Anyway, I weighed three quarters of it and threw the rest away. I mean, that's how bad it got. Okay, so let's look at what is good and what happened. I found OA. I started weighing and measuring. At one point, I reported my food the night before, the day of, what I was eating. And if I changed it, I called a sponsor. That got to be too much, but I know some people who do that, and that works. But what worked for me is what I do now, and I'll tell you that in a minute. But I did start weighing and measuring. And my husband went and got me a $30 scale, digital, because I had one of those posts, like the spring ones, and they're just not as accurate. But, you know, and my sponsor gave me suggestions. I had changes of sponsors because my one sponsor, her husband was ill, and she wasn't able, so she gave me her sponsor, and that was way too strict. It was not working, so I went to somebody else. But I believe that you work with a sponsor for when it works for you, and then you can change. And it, you know, it comes and goes. So I went to OA. This is just way too long. I went to OA in Phoenix, and I got my going. I didn't really get abstinent until this is my 8th month birthday of abstinence.
Yay.
December 9th. Thank you. Thank you very much. Because I had, I'd have 4 months, and then I have a binge, and then I'd have 6 months, and then I have, and now we're praying that this will be the rest of my life, and it's one day at a time. Sometimes it's an hour at a time. One thing that I must add, being a person of faith, I had the ladies at my church, the wife class, Erin, or pastor's wife in the wife class, and this was, I'll have to look when that was, but I had mentioned one night, because I was really struggling, and I mentioned the depression, compulsive overeating. I was in OA, because I've been in OA since January 2007, and I mentioned I was really struggling, would you guys pray for me? And I kind of thought maybe they'd pray there with the prayer, we'd have our class. They all got up and laid their hands on me and prayed for me, and it was probably the most significant in terms of my compulsive overeating. I had 6 months of amazing abstinence after that. And I'm not saying God didn't heal me because I had a break. If I counted up the 3.5 years, I've had more time abstinent than not. And if I did have a break, it would be maybe for a week, and then I'd be back on. So it's very much, you know, I see it as we say, progress, not perfection. But that was a very significant, because it's the power of Jesus. It's not my own, because without this, without Jesus, I'm with my face in pie in my car. And I brought this to show something recently that I've done that really helps. This is how tattered they are. I'm not going to pass them around. But it's the Serenity Prayer. Who am I and what am I doing? The third step prayer, the seventh step prayer. Thing where you say, God, I pray for freedom from self-centeredness. Please replace it with humility and serving others. St. Teresa's prayer. St. Francis, Lord, make me an instrument of thy peace. Prayer of St. Francis of Assisi. They call it the 11-step prayer, but it was from a few hundred years ago. And then there's one called Today, a Prayer for Abstinence. Every morning, I do these. And I have obsessive compulsive disorder, but it becomes, I don't feel like I'm set unless I do these. Like this morning I woke up late, so I did them later, and I felt like I was more calm about but it's a daily reprieve. The other thing that I do now, well, among other things, is I heard this on a phone meeting, and a brief, very brief plug for phone meetings. OA.org, phone meeting list, there's probably 4 a day, all different time zones, all different. And I went to 2 phone meetings a week when I lived in Arizona and 1 face-to-face because we had the 1 car. My sponsor wanted me to do 3 meetings. And you can hear a lot of recovery. And if you ever need phone calls, the people, you can give your number and your first name and that you've got calls. And you don't have to, but they call you. I talk to people from all over the country with years of abstinence. And they'll call you back. And they'll say, I can't say enough good things about phone meetings. If it's winter, if, you know, your car breaks down or whatever, you can get to a meeting. It's really good. Okay. Oh, I just had a brain freeze. Okay, this is good. After a while, when I had trouble getting abstinent, I realized that I needed to work the program and not just have a food plan. You can do a lot with, I had a food plan, I weighed and measured, I exercised. I would get up at 5:30 in the morning and go to Curbs. I still don't know how I did that in Phoenix. I would do that 3 times a week. It was just, that's a God thing. And I have done early morning workouts here. Now we work out after work and I get there to the gym. But I realized that I needed to do the recovery, like work the steps and do the tools. And, you know what I mean? And what has come now in this last 8 months has come and has gone in those periods of abstinence is that I have, if you ask me what my abstinence is, it's beyond a food plan. I have 2 sponsors. That's worked well. I had something for temporary situations in people's lives, and now I have 2, and they get 2 very different perspectives, but 2 very good, it's very helpful for me. So what do I do? Okay. So I came, so just a little more chronological, came to Omaha in 2007, kept OA, went to OA, went to the Wednesday night meeting, really appreciated that one, came to 10:30. There's a Friday night, can't say enough good things about the Friday night, 7 p.m., St. Matthew Church, big book study, listen to speakers, come. I go to the Sunday meeting, but I did get my 90 days. I have my 90-day chip. And that was, and I, my sponsor said, come to this meeting, I'll give you a chip, and I started coming to the Sunday meeting. And I still, that's a regular meeting of mine. But I lost weight, I had abstinence, and I have spiritual, physical, and emotional recovery. Pictures will show you, it's about 119 pounds since that top in 2007, January, 119 and 20. So you see the physical recovery. But the spiritual and the emotional recovery, let's talk a little bit about, I talk about emotional abstinence. I'm a better, I wrote this down, wife, daughter, sister, aunt, church member, citizen, worker. I mean, look how focused I was on the food. I'd have breakfast, and then I'd have those candy bars, and then I'd have lunch, you know, what I was going to, and what was I thinking about while I was teaching? I was thinking about food. Well, now that I'm abstinent, praise God, I'm present in the moment. I'm a better wife. I'm more attentive to what my husband needs and not being self-centered. Because when I'm in the food, I'm very self-centered. And I'm very selfish. I mean, I would think about when I could, and then what would I do? I'd sleep. Well, then that's 2 hours in a night, or if I come home from work and sleep, that I'm not, you know, being with my husband. So I think that's emotional abstinence when you don't, when I don't, I don't have those, I don't know how to say it, but when, well, I feel like when I'm emotionally abstinent, I'm healthy in my mind, and I have a healthy self-esteem, and I have a healthy, and I'm able to serve others, like do service in OA, put up chairs, call newcomers. I try to make sure I put names of newcomers down and call them. Okay, here's a miracle. I got to make sure I mention this. So the Sunday afternoons, I'm very good with structure, especially when I weigh and measure. And Monday, I eat lunch at noon. A person comes cover my desk. And I, you know, and, but on Sundays and Saturdays, I don't have the structure, and it's a little bit harder. And on Sunday afternoons, if I take a nap, it's hard to get up and go to that 4 o'clock meeting. And I start thinking about food. So this, I was abstinent, I was in my abstinence, and I had taken a nap, and I got up, and I wanted to go to the meeting, or that was that time, so I started out. And Dean and I had taught children's church that morning, and it was the name of the Lord is a strong tower, was our lesson. And I prayed in the car. I think I just said, Jesus, help me, or in the name of the Lord, I need your help, because I wanted to go to Hy-Vee and binge. And I didn't even know how much I meant that prayer. I just said it. And it was like being willing to be willing to be willing. And it was as if angels took my car, and I went down the street, and instead of going right to Hy-Vee, I went straight down 60th to the church at St. Matthew, and I went to that meeting. And I was able to serve. I facilitated or led, you know, when you read a script and ask somebody to read and all that. And I did service, and I stayed abstinent. So even just making it to a meeting. Okay, what it's like now. Life of sane and happy usefulness, as it says in the big book. Not as much sleeping to escape of the depression, more energy, dependence upon God and others, humility. I daily ask God to remind me that I'm not the center of the universe. Discipline and self-control, this from abstinent and exercise. I started, this is another good thing, I started going to aerobics at Gold's Gym, and I was used to a half-hour curves. So I would go to aerobics for half an hour, and then I would leave. And I always felt really like, okay, bye. But I was like, I'm going to get my health. Well, then I started staying longer, and then I realized, oh, at a certain time, they stop and do, like, crunches, and so you don't have to go full force for, like, you know, you're not cardio. And I had one step, it's a little thing you step on, and that was what I did. And I was one of the only people that had just the one. And then I graduated putting another one underneath for part of the class. And then I got to where I could have the one for the whole class. And then I started staying for the whole hour. And then it's like recovery is progressive. And then I got where I could put that second step in for part. And so then I got to where I could go the whole hour with two steps, except when they tell you to do less because they change it, you know. And it was great. And then they changed the aerobic schedule. So now I can't really go as often, or sometimes I go on Fridays. But I still go to the gym, and I work out, and I do crunches, and I walk. I mean, I just, and I don't feel myself. Or Dean and I don't feel my energy, and my depression is a lot better when I exercise, and Dean goes, and it's great for us to, we both go, and then sometimes we go for walks around our apartment. But I'm a better, getting up on time, I'm better, not every day, doing diligent work, being a better wife, listen, talk, encourage, not nag as much, do chores, serve my husband. Things that have prayer, I had this prayer for 2 years, women's reflective prayer on Saturday mornings at 7:15, 7:30, and I got, and that revolutionized my life. It was just amazing. Improved self-esteem, reduced stress, I think I'm learning. Fun to buy smaller clothes. I was a 22 in Lane Bryant, 22. I am now, I don't know, I have one pair of pants that are 12s that are too big. I got an 8 at Kohl's, but the sizes, as you know, anybody that's bought in different sizes of clothes, the rich people, they give you a lower size for a bigger size because they want you to feel better about buying it, you know? I mean, that's what my friend the seamstress said, those more expensive brands, that's what they do. Because I got a small dress, and it's probably more like a medium, but I certainly did buy that dress because it's a small, and it was $15. So, and then, okay, if you ask me about what my program is, or my food plan, I have a food plan, but my abstinence includes other things with the tools. I talk email regularly with my sponsors. I do it, I was at 2, and now I'm like 1-2, and I try to get a phone meeting in, but I consistently go to meetings. We have a new tool called Action Plan, which to me really does speak exercise. Other people might say different actions. I think journaling for me is an action plan. I've made a good amount of amends. I'm technically on step 10, still working on 8 and 9, had some really good amends, and 10, and then I do 11 and 12. I practice prayer, meditation, improve our conscious contact with God. One thing, I'm going to go on a limb and mention this, I don't think you're going to mind, but I forgot to pre-approve it, but Dean and I started doing devotions together on a consistent basis about a year or two ago, and it's just transformed our lives. So I can't say enough good thing about what your faith is. But now, I've been a little bit off, but overall, what I do is at lunch, I eat my lunch, and then I have time with God. I journal, I pray, I read the Bible. Sometimes I'll work on my children's church lesson. This week I worked on this, I'm at lunch, so it might be something a little bit different. But I have that quiet time and that time of meditation. One thing I learned in the prayer group, Saturday mornings with my church, was to listen to God. To sit, sit for 5 minutes and be silent. Well, of course, for me, but I actually have gotten to where I can sit for a half hour. And just, you know, I haven't done it very often, but contemplation and meditation and listening to God. Better worker. I'm not focused on food. I'm more present in my job, so I'm a better sister. I'm a better, you know, I'm more into other people because I'm not into myself. Okay, just a little bit about what I do. It's 120 pounds, 119. One of my pants is a size 8, which feels really good, but I just know it's not an 8. This is a good statistic, and I don't think our gentleman here will mind, but I was a 42 double D bra at my heaviest, and I did have a breast reduction surgery because that was a physical need I had. It was really bad for my back. And now I'm at a 34, 36B. So I can buy the fun bras with polka dots on them. I don't have to buy the Playtex 18-hour 4 clips on the back. I can't even, they're all too big. I was able to buy, I went shopping, had a gift card, I felt like $1 million. You know, and it doesn't, my husband and I are going to see me, but it's something that makes you feel good. And I learned to buy, you know, silly underwear instead of like the granny kind, you know, because it makes you feel better. So that was the question, was I going to say that, and I decided to say it. I'm closer to Jesus, my higher power. Okay, I've done a lot of amends. I had some really good amends. I have one where I sent something to a prof at college. I haven't heard back, and I'm really kind of nervous, but I did it. I haven't heard his reaction. Okay, so I have some things in my abstinence that I make at least one phone call a day for outreach. Usually in addition to my sponsor calls, I read 2 pages of literature as a minimum a day. I go to my meetings consistently, and I do my journaling. I try to work on doing service. And I consider service like making breakfast for my husband. I serve on the prayer team at church. I consider that service. But I also, you know what I mean, there are things you can do in your life that are service, along with OA service, which I try to do, you know, little things like picking up the chairs at the end of a meeting. You know, but it makes a difference. I work out regularly. I weigh and measure. My family knows, and they're very supportive. My family has, I'm very appreciative. Family dinners, they have fruit for me because they know that I don't eat sugar. They're supportive in saying, oh, you know, you might not want to eat this. And, you know, I have a very supportive family. I'm not going to go through all of these, but, like, I'll have bratwurst. They have a lot of fat. I'll have them once a week. It's a limit. I limit my caffeine. And just a little bit about what I do is I have, like, a certain amount of dairy, starch, protein, and fruit in the morning. And I plug in my categories. And then I have 4 ounces of protein, 2 cups of vegetables, and 1 starch grain for lunch. And then I actually cut my starch and grain in half for dinner. And then I have fruit and dairy before I go to bed. And it's 6 ounces of fruit. And I don't eat sugar. There's some very exceptions, like if there's a spice or there's bouillon, and I've worked this all out on my abstinence. My sponsor knows that there's bouillon in the stew, you know, but I even check my salad dressings for 5th ingredient or less. And I just, because I can't have one cookie. I have to have 10 or 5 or 2. So I have a piece of fruit. That's what I do. Yeah, I think that's about it. I wanted to read this. I found it. It's just short. I think the name of the pamphlet is a commitment to ask. I probably shouldn't have made an illegal copy, but I sent the pamphlet to somebody who needs literature. So, a commitment to abstinence. Recovery and a commitment to abstinence. Recovery is the result of living the Overeaters Anonymous 12-step program. Many of us have come to believe that committing ourselves to abstinence on a daily basis is essential to our recovery. What is abstinence? According to the dictionary, the word abstinence means to refrain from. Abstinence in Overeaters Anonymous is the action of refraining from compulsive eating. What is commitment? Commitment means to entrust, to put into safekeeping, to pledge oneself to a particular course. Hasn't this been our greatest problem, truly committing ourselves to refraining from compulsive eating on an ongoing basis? Full of determination, we are great in the short run, but when the everydayness begins to set in, we lose interest. For most people, especially compulsive overeaters, a diet is something temporary. This is the part I wanted to highlight. One goes on it and then goes off it. In Overeaters Anonymous, we believe in abstaining from compulsive eating every day, one day at a time. It is the rest of my life. And I don't think about not having sugary substance A or pie for the rest of my life. I think I'm not going to have it for today. And I can do that. I can do it for an hour. And I can make a call. I have a new rule. When I go out to eat, because I've had some scary situations with Chinese food and portions, is I tell somebody in OA what I'm going to have before I go out to eat. I go out to eat, and then later I call and report in. And I have a little trick of the trade. I get a to-go box. I put half of the portion in there. I close it. That's another, and then I eat. Because I can't just, because I'm not really to the point where I bring my scale to restaurants. I brought in measuring cups. I brought in my own dressing. But I'm just not quite to the point. But my family understands I do bring it to family dinners. In Overeaters Anonymous, we begin, okay, each individual is free to determine his or her own way of achieving abstinence according to personal needs and preferences. Abstaining from compulsive eating, unlike dieting, has a sense of permanence about it. Unlike our dieting days when we abstain only one day at a time, not worrying about any ensuing results. Each new day we commit to our personal plan of abstinence without thinking about tomorrow, next month, or next year. And it's, I could find it, but I don't know the page. That's okay. What we have is a daily reprieve based upon our fit spiritual condition. That's, I think, in the promises in the big book. And that's, if I get up and I have my coffee. He knows, I do them out loud, it helps. He brings me my coffee, I sit in the bathtub, I do my prayers. And I read them out loud, and I make, and maybe I'll switch them out, you know, get some other ones so I don't get too tough, you know. You don't want to get it to be rote. I have my devotions at lunch. Dean and I have devotions in the morning. I wait, you know, I just go, and I make a call. Maybe I'll make a call at work on my lunch break. I'll say, you know what? or I'll do an email or a text and say, I'm having trouble with this, you know, and I make that outreach, and I don't do it, I depend upon the fellowship. So I think I've gone a little long, so I'm sorry, but thank you for listening, and if I had a big book, I would read, just go home and read pages 83 to 85, The Promises. It's my favorite part of the big book, and I'll just, miracle happens. Thank you. That's really long, sorry.
Question? I have a question.
Yes, sir.
I also have bipolar and OCD, and I was wondering, when you were diagnosed, then I have a follow-up question.
Sure. I was diagnosed in about January of 2000.
So you knew about it. You knew that you were, medicating yourself with food?
I haven't thought about it, but I'm sure I did medicate myself with food, because when I was depressed, I didn't know I had bipolar till 2000, and that was when I was, 28? So those times when I had a manic episode, or I had that, in high school, my dad would pick me up from school, and I'd be crying, I would be totally, all these activities and doing this, and then I'd be down and I'd sleep. So we never knew I had bipolar till 2000. So yeah, I would say I was self-medicating with food, especially with the depression. Does that help? Okay. And you had a follow-up?
Well, I just wondered, then when you went on your medication, sometimes it can make the food problem worse, depending on what they put you on.
Yeah.
Did that happen?
I've been very fortunate in that side effects from my meds have not really hit me the way-wise. I've changed my meds in the past, 3 years when we got off Depakote. I've been fortunate, I just have to think a second, to not have gained weight as a result of a med or lost weight as a result of the med. I there may have been some there in Phoenix when I was on one that may have made me gain a little. But when I was really getting down to business with OA in 2007 to now, my meds didn't bother me with weight, for which I'm very thankful, because it just depends on what they are.
Okay.
Yeah.
Other questions?
Okay. I'll let you.